Breaking down the top NBA draft prospects across the globe, you're listening to the Prospect Podcast with Ethan Piotta and Alex Brown. And welcome back to another edition of the Prospect Podcast. I'm Ethan Piotta, joined today by Alex Brown. Alex, how's it going today?
Hey, Ethan, it's going well, man. Ready to talk 21.
Absolutely. Ready to get a breath of fresh air onto the Prospect Podcast and the future of what's to come. We're talking next year. I think it's safe to say one of the best classes, potential classes that I've seen in a really, really long time. I think there's, we'll talk about it in a second, but there's legitimately a number of guys that could make a case right now out of high school, out of professional ball, wherever they're playing, to go top one, top two, top three in this 2020 draft.
Yeah, it's a very, very strong class, or at least it's looking like it right now. Looks like to be the strongest since the 18 class with Luka and Ayton and Jared Jackson, all those guys. That's the closest in recent memory, at least for me, regarding the strength.
And Luka really holds that class up too. And you can, I think,
yeah, Trey I should say.
Yeah, Trey, in my opinion, obviously, is a safe second. But yeah. I think even this class has, you're talking about a guy like Cade Cunningham that kind of has that Luka level potential.
It's in the same tier,
Definitely. And I think the thing about this class is that the list goes on after that. There's a number of guys that have breakout potential. And there's just a number of guys that I think could fill out the depth of this class, including returners from college basketball last year, that could really make it a well-rounded just overall excellent draft class.
Definitely. I'm really looking forward to see what this class has in store for us.
Absolutely. So, I kind of touched on it in the intro, but how many guys would you take number one from the pool of 2021 guys this year?
Right now, I mean, obviously Cade Cunningham, Jalen Green, I'd consider BJ Boston, Kuminga. I may even consider, I know for a fact I would definitely consider Garuba as well. Mm-hmm. At least probably five guys at the very least. And of course, still waiting to see how some of these other guys progress. But I have a feeling that when their college or international days are done, they're going to be in the conversation for a number one pick from this year, as far as being that good of a prospect.
Yeah, and I thought about this one for a while, and I settled on it. It's a matter of would I take them or LaMelo. I honestly think over these last few months, the potential and just the prospect that is LaMelo Ball has kind of upheld this 2020 class for me, at least, because I know we have differing opinions. Mm. We can get into Killian and LaMelo all over again. But I would I would safely take Kuminga, Cunningham, and BJ Boston, all three of them right now if I had the number one pick in this upcoming draft straight out of their respective high schools. I mean, Kuminga was a junior in high school last year. That just shows you how incredible of a player he could become. I think, moving on to the next one, do you have an answer for how many guys would you take top three? Because I think that could be wide-ranging in this one.
That could be probably 10-plus, I could think.
Yeah.
Probably I could add maybe even Evan Mobley, Jalen Johnson, Scottie Barnes, Suggs, Caleb Love. Would after their college seasons, I think they'd have a chance to be in that top three conversation. So maybe 10, maybe a little bit less than that, but definitely some strong guys that would be in top three consideration for this class.
I agree with you there. So let's get into our top 10s. And right off the bat, I think it's pretty much unanimous. I have him in his own tier as for now. Do think Kuminga and BJ Boston, at least for me, have potential to join him in this tier. But Cade Cunningham is probably one of the best prospects that I've ever evaluated since I started doing this. And he sits alone right now for me at one, and for you as well.
Yeah, I really don't see anybody having a chance to join him. When I was looking at when I was evaluating his game, he projects to me as, you know, a star initiator in potential Helio, you know, a guy that the offense can completely revolve around and that he can drive. And I think that's just crazy valuable to have. You know, he's a plus defender as well. Phenomenal pick and roll operator, amazing vision, really good shooter, love his stroke, on and off the ball, he can score. I mean, there's just everything to like there. There's very, very few weaknesses. You'd have to really, really nitpick to find something that's wrong at this level, because by the time he's ready for the draft, I think, you know, we're looking at a guy that could be in the same tier as a prospect. As Luka and Zion, you know, the definitive number one guy that, you know, there's really no argument against. And I don't see him moving from that spot unless there's some regression or, I mean, I'd take him number one today without any hesitation.
Without any hesitation, absolutely. And you're right, it's going to be extremely hard for someone to jolt him from that number one spot. Especially just with the situation that he's going into next year at Oklahoma State. It's a really player-friendly situation, in my opinion. He's going to join, I think, you know, a solid core. And another thing that really stood out to me, you know, you talk about, can you check all the boxes? You got to really nitpick to find a weakness with Cade. Well, even on the intangible side, like, he kind of displayed a boatload of loyalty by staying with Oklahoma State this year, despite their known postseason ban. I you know, you'd imagine someone on his level would have the liberty to pretty much go to any school that he wants, but he stayed at Oklahoma State with Coach Mike Boynton. And I thought that was a really mature move from a guy like Cunningham, who, you know, it was funny that he even played high school basketball this year. Like, he did not have to play a game for Montford his senior year. He's a freak of nature. And he was 10 times better than everybody else on the basketball court. You know, watching him play, it was ridiculous. He barely even had to break stride at times with Montverde this year, because of just how dominant that team and him, you know, he himself was. So to stay with Oklahoma State as well, I think that was a really clear indicator of the potential person he could be off the court. Potential good sign for his NBA future as well. And you can't read too much into it, but I just, you know, at the beginning, for me at least, it's a good sign. I'm glad that he stayed at Oklahoma State. I would say the only real thing with Cade that I'm, you know, hoping to see development in is the jump shot. That's the one thing
I really like his jump shot.
See become a little bit better, and the numbers aren't there. And so, you know, again, I'm nitpicking here, but I'd like to see him become the jump shooter that he could project to be one day, because all the indicators point towards positive. The numbers just aren't there right now. So I think that's the one thing for him right now is to become that reputable jump shooter from outside. And then you're talking, I think, already on top of everything else that he has, one of the best prospects that I've ever evaluated.
Yeah. And I definitely buy the shot, like 100%. I think he's going to be a plus shooter. 100%. I think he's going to be a plus shooter. But going back to your intangibles point, you know, as a guy that's going to be a, you know, potential superstar initiator or an engine, or a Helio, as we call him, having that loyalty and those intangibles is huge for me, because it's going to leak through the whole organization and it's going to infect the teammates. So having a guy like Cade, who has demonstrated, you know, loyalty so far, but he's also extremely competitive. He also, you know, he has a good head on his shoulders. He has all the intangible traits that I've seen publicly to be a guy worth building a team around and really putting a long-term investment in. I don't see much wrong there. I'm sure there is something, because there's never nothing. But right. He looks pretty set to be the number one guy.
presents himself well, and I mean,
he does
everything on the floor too. I mean, we barely even had to talk about basketball because I think anyone that is probably listening to this has watched, I would say, you know, a good amount of Cade Cunningham. I mean, he's his passing and his vision is
on
a generational level. I mean, he sees things on the floor that, you know, people dream of, and like it's literally ridiculous some of the passes that he makes. And he makes with ease, to be honest too. It's like LaMelo times 10 in my opinion when you watch him pass the ball. And it's
like
it's
a mix of Melo and Killian, if I
can. Yeah, definitely, because he has the under controlness of Killian, and he has the, you know, the wherewithal to run an offense and make the right pass 10 times out of 10 times, kind of like Killian. But he also just has the cojones to make some of these reads and make some of these behind the back and pocket passes like Melo does. Yeah, and so it's a sight to see. If you ever want to just watch good basketball, just watch Cade Cunningham throw full court passes with absolutely no hesitation.
That's beautiful. It's some of the most fun I've had is watching him. Probably the most fun I've had watching a prospect that's Luka and Zion. I mean, I know their names keep coming up, but you know, it's that elite of a prospect. At least that's how it's looking right now.
Easily. So, Alex, start me off with your number two, because this is where we start to differ a little bit, at least, you know,
of course,
at these early stages. Who's your number two and why?
My number two is Jalen Green, of course, the guy that made headlines by going to the G League. He's going to be the headline of the front runner, the lead scorer, the initiator for their offense. And in general, he's one of the best above the rim finishers, just players in general, that I've seen in a guard prospect at 6'5", being able to jump the way he does and move with the basketball and create space for himself on all three levels and just score from anywhere is, with his confidence, it's just really fun to watch. He also has some flashes of, you know, having a strong handle, having decent playmaking instincts and quick decision making. He has good I think his instincts will really shine the more he has the ball in his hand. But high motor. I haven't seen much of his defense, which could change. But I can imagine, you know, he can protect the rim in space with his vertical. You know, he has almost Cassius Stanley-esque kind of jumping. Yeah. And it's just hard to see him be a negative team defender if he was engaged, just because of how quickly he can accelerate. He should be a major passing lane threat. I just think he's going to be a very, very rare guard prospect that can do it all with the athleticism you need for a star. So he's probably the only person that the mainstream folks will talk about having a chance to make a run at Cunningham for the number one spot, but it would be very difficult for him to to get there for me. But I think he has the potential to be a scoring star as of now. I love his game. He's just really fun to watch.
Well said. And this is a guy that has been playing in the professional ranks. I mean, even going back to, you know, some of the U17 USA games, he's 16 years old out there, probably 10, 15 pounds less than he is now, maybe more, and still making a positive impact on the floor alongside guys that are going to the NBA or, you know, potentially going to the NBA this year, and Vernon Carey and Isaiah Stewart and a few others. and Jalen Green's out there, and he's on the younger side. He's a 2002 birthday. And, you know, I it's funny enough because I'm a little bit lower on him. He's 5 for me. But like, again, any other draft class, he's 1 or 2. And you mentioned it. He has the potential to be a one-of-a-kind scorer. What holds me back right now is I do want to see him fill out a little bit more. I don't know his exact weight. I've seen it differ from, you know, every single website. That's how it is with these guys. But I kind of have him listed just as a rough 175. And that's kind of what I've settled with. But, you know, it's going to be mainly the improvement of the jump shot, filling out the body. But you're right in the fact that it is hard to gauge his defense because you could tell he wasn't engaged all the time this year at Prolific Prep, which is fair enough to say. I mean, again, this is
pretty common.
Right. He didn't have to suit up if he didn't want to. Like, you know, he could get pretty much any offer that he wanted to and chose the G League. But I want to, you know, you're totally right that he has all the tools in terms of athleticism, kind of, you know, a wiry guy with long arms that slides his feet well, moves his feet well, has a tremendous vertical. I mean, he's just an insane vertical athlete. So I have him at 5 right now, and it's not so much against Jalen Green because I do think that the shot will become, you know, something that I'm more comfortable with. He has kind of a low release point right now, which does hold me back a little bit. But I think, you know, 5 is kind of the baseline for him. You know, it's more of a sign of how strong this class is.
Yeah, I understand that. And to add to your point about the frame and adding on weight, you know, that's going to be a thing you're going to see a lot of in this class, minus guys like Kuminga and Cunningham and maybe Garuba and you know, Johnson. You're gonna see it a few times, I suppose. Maybe not as much as some other classes, but it's hard for me to judge, you know, 17-18 year olds on their frame when they have so much more filling out to do.
Right.
You know, I know I'm not the same size weight that I was when I was 18. And you know, you can grow even. So, you know, I'm going to wait more till draft time to have that as a factor, but from skill and athleticism, he's going to be my number two guy. And I'm just really looking forward to seeing what he can do. Who's your number
especially two? In the G League setting, yeah. And this is a guy that could be potentially joining him. Kind of really the only big name that we're still waiting to see what we'll do after he reclassified into the class of 2021, but Jonathan Kuminga from the Patrick School, number two for me. And I am just a super big fan of his game. I think, you know, watching him this year, he was the guy at the Patrick School as a junior, and he's someone that has an NBA ready body right now. It's a weird thing with this class. There's some guys that have some filling out to do and probably will have, you know, that opportunity. And there's other guys like Jonathan Kuminga, like Cade Cunningham, like Jalen Johnson that are NBA ready bodies right now. And Kuminga is a man amongst boys out there right now. It's going to be interesting to see how his game translates because he doesn't have elite burst. He's 6'7", but, you know, he just bully balls his opponents, gets to his spots. He's, I would say, an above average shot maker with below average shot selection IQ right now, which is something that I think will improve, especially just depending on the setting that he goes to, and has all the potential to be a future two-way star, especially with his, you know, his defensive tools. He slides in at number two for me right now. I'm super excited to see what he does, whether that's Texas Tech, which I love the fit, or G League, which is also a good move.
Definitely. And, you know, just bringing it back, he has probably the best frame in this class for a wing or a potential combo forward. I mean, as you said, he's a man among boys, and you can just see he knows how to use those tools at such a young age. And just imagining how much better he's going to be, you know, in a year, that's pretty, you know, it's enticing. Yeah. And I'm not as high on his shot as you are. I think he doesn't have the most natural touch, and the shot selection may be a negative. But, you know, the defensive upside is notable. And, you know, his space creation is a little more subtle. And I'm not sure he can build it to an NBA level. But, you know, he's very young, so I'm not entirely sold on that yet either way. But he has probably one of the best bases to build upon, other than Cade, who's, you know, already, you know, he's a superstar. But, you know, he is – huge defensive upside, highly self-confident. I just like the base he has to work with. I think it's one of the best we've seen in recent years for a wing.
Yeah, and the jump shot is it's kind of a swing factor for Kuminga, and I think he'll be fine. Definitely. I'm not really worried about it. It's, you know, at least for me, it's mainly the lower body that he really struggles with, and it just goes everywhere. And it has a lot to do. He shot, you know, being the guy – and playing so many other high-level high schools and high-level opponents, you know, whether that's in AAU or in high school, you know, he was forced to take a lot of tough shots. That's arguably the biggest knock on him is kind of his shot selection. Yeah. Like he would throw up these fadeaways that, you know, are like, okay, like he's still making them. He's still getting them off at times, and it results in great shot making performances, but it also kind of does cast a shadow on his game a little bit. And it's mainly the lower body. And I don't know if that's 100% translatable, because it does have to do with the degree of difficulty that he had on some of his fadeaways and contested pull-ups and whatnot. But it is something that I hope he does work on and perfect, because I actually do like his upper body and his high. He has a high release point, and it, you know, speeding that up will, I think, will come with time. But overall, it's mainly just the two-way potential with Kuminga, and we talked about it. I mean, defensively, this guy has the potential to be an absolute monster, the way that he moves his feet and just the athlete that he is on that size and his frame.
Yeah. Again, great base to build upon. He's going to be really fun to watch develop. Yeah, he's I believe, at 4 for me, because number 3 I have BJ Boston. And I've been kind of rising on him recently. Because what I really like about him as a 6'6 wing, you know, with room to grow, he can score on and off the ball. His mechanics are really versatile. Not the most textbook, but really versatile, solid. His shooting is stellar. I'd really like to see him make a larger impact on the court in other areas. Doesn't make a big impact on the glass, mostly because he can get pushed around due to his slight frame. And his production as a playmaker, even though he kind of shows promise on both ends, is kind of lacking. But when you have a wing that has his scoring package, that has the potential to be like 6'7" and fill out a little bit more, he'll probably always be wiry. But, you know, having a wiry 6'7" two guard, you know, that'd be pretty nice to have. I'd just like to see him continue to refine, hit the weight room, but he really gets to his spots well off the dribble and is a great athlete overall. He just really needs to put on strength.
Agreed. And you nailed it. I mean, I want to put a take out here because I flip-flopped every day between Boston and Kuminga at 2, because, you know, they kind of are similar but not similar at the same time. I mean, completely different body types, but they're similar level potential shot makers. And I mean BJ Boston, I mentioned Cade Cunningham was one of the most enjoyable prospects I've ever watched. I think BJ Boston's up there too. Watching him at Sierra Canyon this year was an absolute joy, because he is someone, we mentioned the scoring package, you know, it's rare you see guys with his height. And he supposedly also has about a 6'11 wingspan or a 6'10 wingspan, which is plus 4 to his height, which is listed as 6'6", could be 6'7". It's rare you see someone, you know, with his height that can put the ball on the floor like he can, that can space create, that can beat you on all three levels. He has an extremely high motor. On a team that's so crowded with potential like Sierra Canyon, he let everyone know from day one that he was the guy. And he, every time I've watched him play, he made it a literal challenge to anyone that was guarding him, you know, that he wants to beat you one-on-one and he wants to let you know about it right after. He's such great confidence and just such great fluidity. And, he's really comfortable and dynamic with the ball in his hands too. And actually defensively, you know, he did lack at some points. You would see him under the glass, kind of playing that 4 spot almost at Sierra Canyon beside, I think it's a Harold Yu, their big 7'3 big man at Sierra Canyon. But, you know, him playing at that 4 spot, he did get pushed around the glass. I want to see him add to the frame. But overall, defensively on the wing, I saw strong fundamental closeouts from him. I saw him slide his feet really well. I saw him stay in front of guys when he wanted to use his length. He has good tools on that end. But overall, on the offensive side of the ball, I think he really has the ability to be a transcendent scorer if he continues on his current development track. I am really in on BJ Boston. I think he's going to show out next year, and I think his scoring package at his height is just not something that you see often. So I think teams would be wise to have him highly ranked going into next year.
Wow, that's interesting. I didn't expect that, a transcendent scorer, but – I kind of have him more as, you know, a high option scorer, but I'm definitely gonna pay more attention to it because that's high praise.
You know, He's one of my guys. He's one of my guys for next draft that okay. I can just see with his scoring package that, you know, I think it's gonna translate just extremely well. The way he's able to space create, the way he's able to get his shot off.
Oh yeah.
He'll have to make some minor adjustments, but, you know, I mean,
he could get there.
Yeah, definitely. Getting to the rim the way he does and being able to have that step back already in his game, have space creation tools like he does, I don't think you see it often. And that's why I really do think he has the potential, if he continues on his current track at least, to become a real big-time scorer one day in the NBA. That's what I'd like to say already, you know, at the culmination of his senior year in high school. So yeah. We'll see how that ages. That could age bad. But
hey, I mean, he definitely has a great scoring package and a lot of things that are going to translate. So it's worth paying attention to. You know, he has a great scoring base to build upon.
Four for me, Jalen Johnson. I'm actually, you know, I've risen on him a lot. I'm excited to see what he does in kind of a crowded roster at Duke next year. Because I really want to see him as the guy. And he's someone, again, NBA-ready body already, 6'8", 215. That's what I've got him listed at right now. He just gets to his spots extremely well. He's explosive athlete on top of that. I mean, I saw him – I think it was in AAU when he dunked on Isaiah Todd. And I was like, my goodness. Like, this guy is an insane – like, he'd be ready to play – in the NBA right now. I don't know how well he'd do, but I think he'd be ready to play right now. I just think, you know, kind of like Kuminga, but to a lower degree because I don't buy the shot as much. I'd like to get a little bit more comfortable with it.
Same.
But super strong end-to-end potential. The passing and his shooting accuracy on, you know, both ends needs to improve a lot. And I do have questions about his motor, but when you see someone that's 6'8", 215 that can handle the ball like he can, again, that's – you know, though that's a package that just doesn't come around too often. And I think, you know, again, the two-way potential that he has really stands out. I kind of have him and Kuminga 1-2, flipping him, Kuminga, and BJ Boston back and forth because they do kind of have similar scoring packages in a way, all have their differences. But a guy like Jalen Johnson, just extremely explosive, great two-end potential, in my opinion. And another guy who has a really nice base to build on. I think if the shot comes around, Definitely. You're looking at a really nice player.
Yeah. I have Jalen Johnson at 7, mostly because of the shot, but he could definitely rise because what I really like about Johnson is his playmaking potential and his upside, you know, as a handler at 6'8". You know, one of the archetypes that's really gaining a lot of value in the modern game. Also with the revolution of kind of the scoring guard being more prevalent in prospects, especially this year with so many guys like Maxey and Terry, et cetera.
Right.
Having a jumbo initiator is really valuable. And while he might not be the number one scorer for Duke, I think you're going to see him play that jumbo initiator role quite a lot. I think, again, the main narrative we'll see play out is, can he shoot the ball at a league average level?
Absolutely.
And, you know, the confidence is there. I'd really just like to see, you know, mechanical refinements and just increased production and volume. But, you know, the finishing is there. The ability to get to the rim, as you said. You know, the athleticism and handle are solid enough where I can see him consistently breaking down defenses, which, you know, that's something you need as an initiator. You know, if you're going to be that jumbo initiator, you can succeed without a jump shot, I mean, theoretically, like Ben Simmons, because, and not comparing the two, but in the same archetype,
right?
That's been shown that it can be done. So while shooting is a major swing factor, it is so valuable to have jumbo initiators, even if they aren't your engine on your team, because it opens up your team to maximize the value of other players. And it gives you a ton of lineup versatility. And, yes. You know, his potential on the defensive end as well as a playmaker is it's quite notable. But,
yes.
You know, great base to build upon. Could definitely see him rising. But it's him at seven for me is, again, kind of just a function of how strong the class is. I could see him having potential to go number one in this class. But yeah. I really like his game. I think he has a really fun base to build upon, to build himself into a jumbo initiator.
Definitely. You mentioned it too. It's so valuable to have guys like that, because you even see with Ben Simmons, not only is he your main ball handler on the offensive side of the ball, but he also guards, you know, the main scorer, the primary initiator on the defensive side of the ball. That's something that Jalen Johnson has the potential to do, in my opinion. The biggest thing is, again, just making something simple as making a guy go over a screen because he respects your jump shot will just open up so much more for him. And it will kind of unlock that in-between game. And you know, him being able to go one-on-one with centers is something I want to see, because his package of, you know, finishing and craftiness and athleticism around the rim is eye-opening. And I think he deserves a top five spot on most boards. Again, I think anything without him in the top five is just, like you said, a function of how good this class could potentially be.
Yeah, and I could see him, you know, even if he does, again, having the defense respect you enough to not go under every screen is going to be valuable for him to learn. But I could still see him being a 50% plus from the field and being, you know, high 20s from three the first year. You know, we see guys like Maxey that are kind of similar in that regard, but they can still bring shooting gravity if they leverage it properly. So as long as he's willing to take it and can make it, you know, I think it's going to be, you know, less of a problem than it is for, say, Simmons or, you know, some of these other non-shooters. But I think he has the potential. I just think the shooting is going to be the major, major swing factor.
At five for me is Jalen Green. I know four you have Kuminga, but five is someone new on our boards and someone who's fallen for me a little bit, but I still am a really big fan of, and someone who will probably rise. But Usman Garuba, number five for you. Take it away on him, because he's definitely, I think, consensus the best international prospect in this upcoming draft.
Yeah, so what I really like about Garuba is I'm a huge fan of guys that can do the little things, play defense, and, you know, be low usage, high impact guys. And Garuba is the epitome of that. He's an excellent defender with a strong feel, really good IQ, especially defensively, and as a cutter, he can get his to his spots really well off the ball. He's not really a shooter, but he has the potential and confidence to occasionally hit a few open threes. But I don't see him being a major plus as a shooter. But, you know, his value and his role will be in a similar fit to like a Draymond Green, big glue guy. You know, as a guy that can be a defensive anchor that can switch onto, you know, multiple positions, protect the rim, go up against the strongest offensive player. I mean, physically strongest, and be an event generator that also provides some like tertiary playmaking and impactful rebound. I also want to see him, you know, finish plays as a low option, you know, smart decision maker. He's also an amazing, pretty great athlete. I wouldn't go to amazing, but he's a pretty great athlete with kind of mid-level vertical spacing, runs the floor really well. He kind of does everything you want in a modern small ball five or a glue guy four alongside a floor stretching five, or, you know, like a Lauri Markkanen four kind of archetype. I could see him go below just, again, because of the strength of this class, but he is a very, very, very rare archetype to find in a guy with his athleticism and IQ to want to do the little things as well as he does. And I think you're going to see him, you know, again, while the nature of the season isn't really set yet, I think you're going to see him be a really, really impactful big for Real Madrid. I just love what he does on the floor. Love the value he brings, because he doesn't need to – he has rather low variance upside. He's risk averse. He's going to impact winning. That's what I like about him.
Right. He fits the mold of that glue guy, like you said. He kind of just does the little things well. I mean, how often is it that you see a 17-year-old like him have as prominent of a role on a club like Real Madrid? Like, honestly,
pretty
like
rare.
It's pretty rare. Like, and he, like you said, could take even a bigger step up this year. But it's a weird thing with Garuba because he's got such a strange mesh of, you would expect him to be kind of a raw prospect with his athleticism and his defensive potential. But he also shows flashes of being a pretty fluid passer at times and making correct reads in the short roll or you know, box to box. And also, you know, kind of all over the place, but his handle is interesting and he does bring it out occasionally. And I've seen him hit a step back three or two, which is a rare occasion. And I don't know how often we'll see, you know, him kind of in that role. But I think, you know, if he's just able to maximize his value and continue on the track that he is developing, his defensive versatility, you know, he's someone that you could have potentially guarding lower level big men in the NBA, but primarily kind of, you know, the main wings, like a LeBron or something like that. You know, if he was to continue to develop, to be able to shut down those kind of big wing initiators on offense. And that's super valuable. And you're talking about a guy that's only going to grow and continue to get better. And I think just being able to clean up his mechanics on his jump shot, because it is kind of all over the place at times.
Yeah, it's not very natural. Very mechanical.
Right. Right. Being able to clean that up and just being a reputable spot-up shooter will go a long way for him. But he does come in at 7 for me. Again, a guy who's a function of the draft class that he's in.
Yeah, and I can see how some guys could value him at 7 just because of this class in general. But I think building a base off a 17-year-old, I don't know if there's another guy in the last few years, you know, last 10 years we've seen really with his type of base to build upon, you know, with his athleticism, feel, and, you know, willingness to play that low usage role. So I think he's not going to be the most flashy prospect. He's not going to be the one that New York Knicks want, at least right. The fans. But he's gonna impact winning, and he's gonna be a very valuable player, and that's what puts him in the top 5 for me right now. But who do you have at number 6?
Number 6 for me, we already talked about Jalen Green. He's my 5th guy.
Right.
6th is a guy who I think is going to be early observation. I think he's going to be extremely underrated next year, and that's Scotty Barnes,
right.
headed to Florida State. I mean, I cannot wait to watch him play basketball at Florida State next year under Leonard Hamilton.
Perfect.
It's just going to – it's – I mean, and recently, what did he come in at? 6'9", 270. He was recently
227. 227.
6'9", 227. That's what he recently
That's closer to Raekwon Gray.
You're right. I don't know. It's a 270. 227 is what he recently came in at and was also listed as point guard. I don't know how –
I don't get that.
I don't know how, you know, serious we
He's
are
a
about
glue
that.
Guy.
But
He's
point
a glue
forward,
guy.
Point forward potentially, yeah. Like someone that you can put the ball, you know, put the ball in the hands of a few times a game potentially. Yes, I'm excited to see the way that he progresses next year at Florida State, because he's already an above average defender with flashes of really solid versatility. He's someone that, you know, when Montverde plays someone like Jonathan Kuminga, he's guarding Jonathan Kuminga and giving him issues on the perimeter. He moves so well for his size and his height. But also just on top of, you know, the defensive versatility, he's comfortable with the basketball. I think he can get it done, you know, around the rim. And he's an above average passer. That's what I have him listed as. Some real solid off the dribble promise. But again, it just goes back to the defense with him. And I really think we've only seen guys that go to Florida State become better at defense than they came in. So it's kind of scary to think, you know, what he can become if he cleans up a little bit of his, you know, his footwork and whatnot, because you're looking at a potential, again, defensive monster with the ability to also have the ball and be comfortable with the basketball on the offensive side. So.
Yeah, and he comes in at 8 for me. You know, again, having a guy with his skill set and versatility on the defensive end to pair with, you know, having high energy, being kind of confident, I mean, not kind of confident, very confident, and, you know, at times cocky. You know, he has some playmaking chops. He's a great athlete in the open court. He can handle the ball. He's still a bit raw for me as a scorer. I was watching him finish plays, you know, or even playing in the post. The footwork isn't the most natural thing and has a lot of room for development. But he's going to be a great open court player initially. I think he has a lot of room to grow. But, you know, I love high energy defenders that, you know, with his physical tools, like, he's going to be fun to watch.
Especially plus six wingspan, too.
In a perfect system to develop him and use his traits to the max.
Couldn't be a better system. Could not.
Yeah, absolutely. So really excited to see that next year. Big Scotty Barnes fan. Just hoping he can keep developing his skill set on the offensive end to maximize his versatility. Yeah. And for me at six, I have Evan Mobley. And I know I'm not the biggest fan of big guys, as kind of noted, especially in this class with Wiseman and all that. But what I really like about Mobley early on is, first of all, elite physical tools. You know, he's, you know, 7-footer with long arms. He's, you know, kind of a – he's rather thin right now, but he has put on some muscle, which is rather common at this age. You don't see many grown men 7-footers as far as being filled out all the way. You know, Ayton was probably the last guy that was really all the way there. But really great hands, can put the ball on the floor a bit and – kind of thrives in space on offense. You know, he'll really fit well in the pace and space modern game because he can attack from the perimeter. He flashes advanced dribble moves. His footwork isn't all the way there for when attacking the rim, but there's a base to build upon. You know, and he even has like some Giannis-esque drives at time where he will, you know, cup the ball and just keep it above everybody and, you know, just euro his way to the rim and throw down monster dunks, and it's just beautiful to watch because nobody can stop it.
Right.
And, you know, he's a really fluid athlete that could be elite with added muscle. I don't really know how high of a motor he has. I know his brother, Isaiah, described him as kind of the more of the – and this is not a reflection of motor. It's just kind of his character. A little more introverted, little, you know, not as high energy.
Definitely.
Which is fine. I'm the same way, and I'm still motivated. So it's not like it's not a detriment. It's just a, you know, he's not going to be the guy that's going to be talking about it if he's working out. I think he has a shot that could be built upon. It's not great, but it could be built upon. The fluidity is there. But I just love seeing him use his tools to attack the glass and finish plays. He gets up real quickly. He runs the floor. I'm really excited to see him and Isaiah play off each other, you know, as playmakers, because Evan makes good reads as well. I know that's something I was real high on Isaiah coming into last season.
Right.
And so, you know, COVID permitting, I'm really looking forward to seeing them in person when they come to FGCU because, you know, that'll be really fun to see. But I really like what he brings as a modern big.
Right. And at least from my limited perspective, I think that's a good point you made about Isaiah and, you know, talking about his brother, because I think it was at least 3 or 4 times during my junior year at St. John Bosco, we played Rancho Christian. Damn good basketball team. Actually, we did give them some trouble. Let's be honest here. I was not any part of that, but we did give them some trouble.
What do you mean?
but Evan Mobley, you know, talking about that, when I was a junior, he was a sophomore, and he was arguably the more dominant of the two at that point as well.
Oh, definitely. Definitely.
And so, you know, watching him play, it was a shock to me to find out that he was younger than Isaiah Mobley. I was like, there's absolutely no way. But again, a guy who I honestly have no idea what to do with at this point. He ranks 9th for me because he's got a weird blend of being able to put the ball on the deck at 7 foot. You kind of mentioned those Giannis flashes that we see driving to the paint, but also you want him to fill out he's kind of like you wonder where you're going to put him on the floor. I'm honestly a little bit worried about how he's utilized at USC next year. I don't want him to be put in that Onyeka Okongwu. I don't think he will. I don't want him to be put in that role of only playing on the box, only playing the dunker spot. I want him to be able to, you know, express his tools and progress as a jump shooter and be able to expand his range. So we'll see how it works. I know his dad, I believe, is an assistant coach at USC. So I'm sure he'll put in the word to, you know, get him the amount of adequate touches that will look good for NBA teams. But it's going to be an interesting thing to see, you know, just how he fills out, kind of where he puts himself on the floor that, you know, maximizes potential and more. So he's someone that could definitely rise. I have him at 9 right now because I just honestly, I don't know what to do with him. So
I get it.
Just a tier below some of these other guys we've talked about.
I understand that. And one thing I should note, unlike other guys like Wiseman that are similar size and tools, one thing Mobley has the potential for, and I'm just saying the potential for it, I don't see him doing it in the near future, but you know, he has the fluidity and the ability to attack from the perimeter to have the potential to be kind of a modern four as well. Yep. And that may be a long shot for now, but if he really develops his shot and is in an offense that emphasizes pace and space, of course, I could really see him thriving on, you know, attacking the rim and finishing plays off of initiators, because I think he can be useful in a lot of different situations. And, you know, I know Isaiah didn't really show as much as I wanted him to this year, but he's a little thicker than Evan is. You know,
so yes.
In a year or so, he could fill out. You know, again, it's hard for me to judge prospects that are this young on their bodies, but you know, I'm betting that they're going to fill out in some regard. So I think he could be a plus, and his length is good enough to recover on. I mean, he'll be able to use it at the college level. Maybe not.
He bumped off his spot and still pin your shot with his armpits. So.
Yeah, right. But, you know, at the NBA level, I've seen Mo Bamba not be able to recover with length. So it's not – he'll be able to rely on it for now, but it'll be a very, very interesting evaluation this year.
Yeah, agreed. So I think coming in at 7, I have Garuba, and we've talked about him.
You have
Jalen Johnson at 7, and then Scotty Barnes, 8 for you. Keon Johnson, indeed. 8 for me. Here's an interesting. This class is just extremely, extremely good, and Keon Johnson and Jaden Springer comes in at 12 for me. But those two guys, I am a big fan of Tennessee basketball. I'm a big fan of the way they play. Grant Williams and Admiral Schofield and guys like that come out of there. They're just fun to watch. Eve Pons, you know, we're big Eve Pons fans on this podcast. At least I am. And I know Zach has him at 24. So. But Keon Johnson at Tennessee is going to be, I think, a sight to see next year. He fits in, again, really well with their system. I think, you know, watching him play, there's limited tape on him because he went to a smaller, not, you know, this huge preppy school in Tennessee. I believe it was the Webb school. But someone that, you know, in high school, he's 6'5". That's what he's listed at right now, about 180. With guard skill, he's a tremendous athlete, super springy, and I also think he has the tools to be a really special defender. And although it's not there yet, like, you literally saw him playing center on his high school team while handling the ball offensively. So it's interesting, and it kind of limited his perimeter potential because it seemed he was always attacking the rim because he could, and he could get by anybody that he wanted to. But I'd like to see him, and I think he will add 10 to 15 pounds. But just really, really eye-popping defensive potential with his footwork. He's a really good rebounder at his size as well. Plays above the rim. Good touch. Again, getting stronger will come and will help his finishing ability a little bit. I think he'll probably lack a bit of self-creation ability, which is why I have him at 8. But I think the development of his jump shot will come with that, because we do see flashes. I saw flashes of him taking guys off the dribble, hitting pull-up shots, definitely. Hitting off the dribble, you know, fadeaways and whatnot. And I'm extremely excited to see his development next year because he's another guy, 2002 birthday, on the younger side, has some development to do and development to come as well. And so I'm a fan of Keon Johnson. He rounds out my second tier of guys, if you will.
Right. So, yeah, I think I'm more optimistic about his ability to create, mostly because of his ability to get downhill and use his handle. And I think he's going to be a good, like, secondary creator kind of guy. I'm not all the way there in his shot. I like it. I think it has good flashes, and he has, you know, the confidence at times to really really bury it. You know, he's a guy I haven't watched as much film on as, you know, again, because of the lack of availability in some cases. But I think he's going to surprise a lot of people. And I think you having him that high is a testament to that.
Absolutely, yeah. I'm definitely in on him, if you will. And honestly, I've bounced him in various different places, but 8 is the lowest that he's been. And I'm a fan of a guy like Keon. He's someone that would go top 3 this year in this draft for me.
Wow. All right.
Yeah.
Good enough. Good to know. I'll definitely have to watch more moving forward.
Yes. Yes.
But all right. Well, moving on then. 9 for me is Jalen Suggs attending Gonzaga.
Yes.
And
I like that.
Yes, I like it as well. What I like about Suggs is, you know, he's kind of a modern combo guard, kind of the guy, again, I'd like to play with a jumbo initiator or a plus defender point guard. You know, he's an on-off ball scorer with some playmaking chops. I think he's going to be more of your secondary than your primary. But high-scoring motor, plays with an edge, has some strong defense at times as well, and can probably be a high-option scorer. And if Ayayi stays in Gonzaga, that could be a really, really fun backcourt.
Defensively, I mean, that pops off the page.
Oh my
that
God.
Could be something.
I really hope he stays. Like, I don't even put Ayayi on my big board just because I'm holding out for that. Because I'd love to see that backcourt. And I think Suggs is going to be a guy that's going to thrive over there. And, you know, I know I saw some people talk about Nembhard bothering that. And I was like, Nembhard's not going to be able to play until he has to sit out. So you're going to expect
right.
Suggs to get, you know, some of the reins early on, even on a team like Gonzaga.
Yeah. He's someone that, again, I have him at 10, so I guess I'll round out my 10 here. And I know you have a different combo 10, so I'm excited to see your take on those two guys. But Suggs is, you know, he's interesting, and I'm a fan of his game, and it's really interesting just watching how his kind of football background has crafted him into this
point.
Potential monster defender on the perimeter and reading passing lanes and just locking down guys. I worry a little bit about his overall self-creation ability at the one-day NBA level, which is why I have him a little bit lower. I worry if he'll be able to, you know, provide enough scoring upside to be on the level of some of these other guys we've talked about, and that's really the only thing. I'm a fan of his game.
Yeah, I get that.
He's someone I have a little bit lower than consensus, I would say, and it's mainly just because I want to see that self-creation ability really show out and improve at Gonzaga, and I think it will. It's gonna be really fun to watch that team, and also just how he fits in, because there's a lot of guys at Gonzaga next year. I mean, you're talking, I think Anton Watson and Strother, and you know Corey Kispert probably is gonna be coming back, and you mentioned Ayayi, who's most likely gonna be coming back, and I mean that could be an absolute team, and Jalen Suggs could be the forefront of their title push. As you said earlier, COVID permitting. So he rounds out my top 10, but two interesting guys you have at the end of your top 10, and I want to hear your take on them. So take it away on these two guys.
Yes. So at the end of my top 10, I really couldn't decide at this point between Caleb Love and Jaden Springer. I could see myself putting Caleb Love higher, potentially over Suggs as well, because he has that lead scoring kind of guard vibe to me. He can score in all three levels. He's super confident from deep, can get movement threes, self-creation threes, spot up threes. Like, if you know, he can do it all from deep. He's a really good athlete as well that can play above the rim, create his own space, strong handle, really confident. I think he's going to be more of a secondary playmaker and a guy that can use his gravity as a scorer to leverage playmaking. But, you know, having a lead scoring guard is, you know, it can be really valuable in the right situation. And Caleb Love fits that mold for me really well.
Yeah.
And, yeah, so I'd love to hear your thoughts on him as well. I don't know if you've, if you're not as high as, I mean, you're not as high as I am, but I didn't see where he was on your board.
16 for me. And honestly, I feel like I have him too low, and I'll mess with him and move it up a little bit. It's just, I'm such a big fan of these next five guys in terms of, they're all kind of similar. Jaden Springer and Zaire Williams and Greg Brown and Moses Moody, but and the only thing I really, you know, am holding back on Love, because it's funny. Like, he's 6'3 with a 6'9 wingspan. Like, that's insane to me. That's what's been reported, at least. I'm pretty sure it's been reported by a wide range. So we'll take it with a grain of salt, but maybe 6'8. But still, I mean, the wingspan's there.
I saw it, yeah.
And so I worry, you know, will he become prolific enough? We mentioned he loves to, you know, to have that confidence to shoot from deep and way behind the line, might I add. And he's extremely fun to watch too. I'm interested to see, that's going to be a kind of crowded North Carolina background next year, or backcourt next year, in a way.
I want to see him.
I would agree with that. And I want to see him really take those reins though, and, you know, turn into a high volume scorer. That's what I'm most looking for. That's what's going to sell me on his game. Because I really haven't seen enough of his defense to judge him on that end.
But yeah,
I would imagine with his foot speed and his wingspan that, you know, you could see some upside. So he's a guy that I ranked kind of low, and I feel like I'm underrating at this point, which is good because he can only really move up from that spot. But someone I'm excited to kind of dive into and watch more of.
Yeah, just tentatively low. I get that. And I can see him playing kind of the same role Coby White played as a freshman at UNC, you know, being that lead scorer that can leverage his gravity to play make for others and be a prolific threat from deep. And I think, you know, I think they have a similar skill set in that regard. And, you know, I was a huge fan of Coby White. So definitely a fan of Caleb Love going forward. And Jaden Springer as well was in the conversation. He's kind of at 11 now for me. I've kind of settled 10 as Caleb Love and 11 is Springer. But Springer can create space off the dribble. Heady, motivated defender. I saw him give Cade, you know, trouble at times. He has a good finishing package, a high motor, and can kind of secondary or tertiary playmake. And you kind of get to his shot whenever he wants to. He has really good footwork for his size, for his age. And I'm buying a shot going forward. And I think at Tennessee, alongside Johnson and some of their other core, he could be a really fun player that's going to make a winning impact. I just hope he gets enough touches to really show his offensive versatility.
That's going to be a team in Tennessee next year. That's going to be a really good college basketball team.
Derek Murray, man, Derek Murray. If you're listening, I know it's going to be great. Enjoy.
That's going to be an absolute team next year with him and Keon teaming up. It's going to be fun to watch because, again, those are guys that, you know, are going to be potential, you know, hound dogs on the perimeter guarding ball handlers. And Springer, his wingspan isn't listed, but he looks pretty long.
Yeah, he looks he has a long wingspan. Yeah,
and he has good physical tools, like we mentioned. And I think he's going to be one of those guys that it's going to be hard for him to bust in a way. Like it's going to be hard for him to fall down draft boards because he's got such a solid skill set I think he'll provide value in one way or another. And I'm comfortable with him at 12 right now. So
respect that.
That's our top 10s though. A lot of star power in that. That's a lot more enjoyable and you know potentially fun to talk about than you could say some of the recent draft classes that we've had. But going into our second to last topic before we hit the questions that we got, for you at least, from what you've watched, are there any sleeper or incoming freshmen, under the radar guys, maybe not even five stars, or guys that you just see are lower ranked on many boards that could potentially break out next year. And I also want you to display your thoughts on Josh Christopher, my ASU guy. I want to hear your take on him. So,
well, I'll go with Christopher first because I've watched a decent amount of him. I saw something today too that was like Josh Christopher is going to be the guy that a lot of mainstream folks say is really underrated because he's, you know, a scorer and he's confident and cocky and all that. But I really like his, you know, his, I think he's going to be a really good scorer at ASU. I think his motor is going to win him some fans.
Oh yes.
I'm not totally sold on defense yet. But I think he's going to, you know, he has the kind of ego that's going to make him motivated on the defensive end to make plays. Agreed. I think he's in my top 25 right now. I'm not sure exactly where I have him. And of course it's changing, you know, very frequently, but I think he's just going to be a really strong scorer. It's just, can he provide enough value everywhere else? So Agreed. Defense is the main thing I'll really be evaluating. Christopher.
Do you buy the shot then? Because yeah, I think he shot, I was with 28% or something like that. And that's a bit of a concern for some people is you know, efficiency at least. But I think a lot of that just has to do with the shot taking him and Dior Johnson had at Mayfair. So
I really, when you look at some of the shots he was taking, you know, he has pretty good shot making. But again, you know, the efficiency has to be there as well. Yep. I think with the confidence to take some of the shots he was taking, I don't see why his jumper wouldn't be at least league average, depending on shot selection. Again, still have to watch more to really get a great feel for it. But I just think he's going to be a good scorer. I mean,
agreed. You know,
I think my baseline for him right now is an impactful, like, high rotation score. I don't know if he'd fit in a, you know, starting lineup as, you know, the guy, but he'll be interesting to evaluate.
I think it's going to be, can he provide value as a off-catch shooter is going to be something NBA teams are looking at, especially. But I, you know, he's someone, it's really interesting to me with Josh Christopher. I put him in my top 20. He's 20 for me right now. I haven't moved on him yet. But you know, highest rated recruit ASU has ever had. So I'm super excited for one to just watch him next year because
you better watch every live game.
Oh, absolutely. And you know, he's someone that he's already built up the fan base. He has, you know, X amount of Instagram followers and his commitment was the biggest thing of quarantine. And he wants the spotlight. He's got the spotlight at ASU 100%. He's got the entire school support. There's going to be people that have never watched a basketball game in their life coming to see Josh Christopher play basketball next year. So, you know, absolutely. He brings the hype to the school, which is great. But, you know, with Christopher, I do wonder, is he going to provide enough value in other areas other than just off the dribble, you know, with his athleticism and his ball handling and his shot-making ability? Will he provide value in other areas that are, you know, proficient in an NBA setting? So there's part of me that thinks, you know, he could be a potential two-year guy at ASU, and it's a little bit unlikely. But he's someone that you could see taking that extra year at Arizona State and then maybe breaking out in 2022, if you will. So I'm interested to see how that goes. It's something that's been in the back of my mind and that something that I've been wondering about. But I do agree with you that I think the media is going to extremely overrate him next year, which I hope doesn't do too much of a detriment to, you know, his prospect outlook and his potential value that is, you know, garnered by NBA teams. So we'll see how that.
Yeah.
We'll see how that
I just want to see him do I want to see him do some more little things well and just show where else he can provide value that he's going to be able to fall back on when he's not being the guy as a scorer. So that's my view on him right now. As far as sleeper guys, you know, I'm still diving into the freshman class and there's always guys that will surprise me. One international sleeper this year is Matthew Strazel for me. He's a little undersized, but you know, great scoring package. He's a really fun player to watch. So kind of high on him early on. And then two returners I've been kind of high on for a while that have really not had the spotlight are Kai Jones from Texas. Again, guy with really, really great physical tools and top-notch athleticism, but needs to refine some of the smaller skills. You know, not a high field guy, but he could really end up finding a way to be an impactful player at the next level if he works on developing some of these, you know, ancillary skills. And then Max Iagbunpolo from USC is another kind of guy I've been eyeing for a while. You know, 6'8" guard skills, really didn't get to handle the ball very much at USC, but he played point guard and, you know, in high school.
And, yes, he did, and it was scary. Yeah,
I'm sure you knew.
Scary playing him, watching him develop from even freshman year, and him being on the JV team his freshman year, and then he just hit this massive growth spurt, but took his ball handling skills with him. And so you're absolutely right. That's a great point. And something I often wondered, why in the world was he not getting more playing time on USC last year? It was frustrating.
He was a sniper.
Yes,
he can shoot the ball so well. He has a beautiful.
He can shoot the ball. Absolutely. So he's someone with his just overall physical makeup and, you know, tools and skill set that should be on a lot of radars next year at USC.
Yeah. He was on my radar this year, but I'm looking to see him make a jump next year. So,
agreed.
And, you know, he may even be a 4-year guy or a 3-year guy, but same with Kai Jones.
Right.
But I really like their upside with their, you know, with their athleticism, their, you know, his guard skills and shooting. You know, there's a lot of tools to work with there. And, you know, he kind of played a small role this year. It's kind of more of an off-ball shooter and tertiary handler. But I really want to see him in a more of a primary or a secondary role, taking more shots and getting to the rim and handling the open court. So definitely huge on him making a potential impact. What that impact will be is, you know, it'll be interesting
TBD.
To evaluate. TBD. Yep. But he has all the tools. So those are kind of my picks early on.
I'll do two incoming freshmen and then one returner that I'm really high on. But my incoming freshman, I think I mentioned to you, Caleb Murphy from Grayson High School in Georgia. Watching him play a few times against Sharif Cooper and McEachern. Caleb Murphy was arguably the best player on the court. He's a 4-star recruit. He's going to University of South Florida next year, so he's going to be the guy there. But he's someone that I could easily see. You know, he's got this crazy blend of handle, change of pace. He doesn't have the quickest first step, but he has everything else. Great deceleration ability, great change of pace, really nice finishing package with either hand around the rim. I just think he changes directions and speed so fluidly. Really good hips. Haven't gotten a great gauge for his defensive ability yet, but again, with those kind of tools, you'd imagine he'd be passable to guard ones and twos at the next level. But really, the thing you have to focus on, I think, with Murphy is his scoring package and his potential offensive upside, because his jump shot, I buy it, needs to be developed a little bit in terms of just the release point, and his hand placement is a bit strange. But I'm pretty sold on his jump shot. But again, it's just the self-creation abilities off the charts with a guy like this. And he can get to the rim at will, and he can blow by guys. And his handle is just insane for someone of his age. So I'm super excited to watch him play next year. And the other guy is Micah Peavy from Duncanville in Texas. He's headed to Texas Tech next year, which is a really nice fit. And he's someone that could be a 2 or 3 year, potentially 4-year guy, but 6'7", 195, can jump out the gym, and kind of an interesting shot maker as well. So we'll see how he progresses, but I'm definitely a fan of his game and someone I'm looking at that could make an impact on a good Texas Tech team next year.
Right on. I'll definitely focus on him too.
Yep, and then just one more guy that I'll point out here. A returner that I've seen people grow a little bit higher on. I've I wanted him to stay in the draft this year, to be honest, but Nashawn Hyland from VCU Bones. Yeah, exactly. Known for, I can remember watching his YouTube videos when he was still in high school and you go to the park and destroy kids. I don't know if you haven't checked those out, you should absolutely check those out. Anyone listening to this, but someone that, you know, just at his size, really interesting shot making package. And I think he's someone that could average maybe 20 points per game next year and sneak into the first round, even in a crowded class. I'm high on him. I'm really interested to see how he progresses because he had an encouraging first year at VCU.
Yeah, definitely. I'll definitely be paying attention to him. He's on my list.
Yes, sir. Him and James Bouknight are two guys that are kind of similar, yeah, but have their differences. But, you know, two of my favorite returners for sure. And I think two guys that, you know, could make a big time impact and could kind of be not in the same, not comparing whatsoever, but in that Obi Toppin role where they break out during their sophomore season or Obi, whatever, right, it's redshirt sophomore season, but break out in that second year in college and put up big numbers and, you know, definitely potentially skyrocket up draft boards. So we'll see how that ends up, but definitely a good list of guys.
More.
Go ahead.
I have one more guy that I forgot to mention. Not as much of a sleeper, but I noticed a lot of guys have been writing him off, is Johnny Juzang.
Yes.
Transferring to UCLA, I believe. He has a great shot. He had space creation in high school that I really liked. Mm-hmm. Positional size for, you know, a 2-3, about 6'6", maybe 6'7". I'm closer to 6'6", I'm thinking. I think he's going to thrive in a higher usage role. He really didn't get to show his stuff this year. So definitely look for him to make a jump. That's one of the guys.
That's a really good point.
I'm watching.
Him and Jaime Jaquez at UCLA are two of the guys I've listed that will play kind of that wing role. But again, you hit it again, Juzang, from watching him in person and watching him, on tape in high school, he had way more self-creation and shot creation ability than he showcased at Kentucky, where he rarely got the ball. And that says a lot about, you know, what he could potentially do at UCLA. I think you're absolutely right that he could turn a lot of heads this year if he, fits into that system well.
Definitely. Definitely. And he was really regulated to being just a spot-up off-ball guy. So, I want to see him do more. I want to see him take the reins and show that what he showed in high school, because I really was high on him early on.
Agreed with that. Moving on to our questions now before we end off our show. Number one here from Zach Smith, who we just mentioned has Eve Pons 24. Zach, thank you for the question. Really does solid work over at Advanced Pro Basketball doing scouting reports and has recently had a film breakdown with Tyler Hagedorn of South Dakota State.
Yeah, still waiting for that.
Absolute sniper. Zach asked, any returning mid-major players that you could see sneaking into the lottery? And I think I mentioned the two I'm most focused on. That's Nashawn Hyland and James Bouknight. I guess if you could call them mid-majors.
UConn's not
at all. So, but mainly Nashawn Hyland, I would say, is the guy that could kind of sneak into the lottery in a way. I'm trying to think of more mid-major guys.
I don't really think there's anybody that's going to this year. I'd love to have them eat my words on that. I know Tevin Brown is kind of interesting.
Yeah.
Murray State. But Rashad Phillips is hyping him up now, so who knows. But and he has a good eye for mid-major stuff, if anything. So I really like some of the skills he brings to the table, but I don't think there's any mid-major guys this year, provided something dramatic doesn't happen, that are going to sneak this high in such a loaded class.
Yeah, into the lottery, I don't think so. Like a guy like Javon Jackson, who went to, I think it was University of Texas San Antonio last year, is going to be a senior, and he averaged 23 points per game. So he's definitely someone that's going to be on my radar of like a late second-round flyer potentially. But And there's a few guys like that, I would say, that, you know, that could sneak into that kind of realm. But lottery-wise, I really am just looking at Highland is one of my only guys.
Yeah, I understand that. I'm really just in the boat where I don't see any guys getting there at this point, but I could always be surprised.
Makes sense. Next one comes from Nick's Draft Guy. Thank you again for the question and for supporting our show. Thoughts on Scottie Barnes? I think he can be a top 5 to 10 guy in next year's draft. And we mentioned it, but again, I completely agree with you there.
Yeah, like, top 10 in my opinion.
He's gonna be underrated, I think. And I think that's a safe assumption to make. And I'm excited to see how he progresses and how he grows as a defender, especially at FSU next year. We saw what, you know, it does for guys like Devin Vassell and Patrick Williams. So super, super excited for Scottie Barnes' future.
Yeah, I think we really hit it earlier regarding what we like about Scottie, but he's got all the tools to be a really, really impactful defender, and you know, some of the skills that could really make him a glue guy as well. And I'm always high on glue guys, you know, those right. connecting pieces. So I just really like to see his offense. He has a lot of raw areas there that I want to see improve, but it would not surprise me if he snuck into the top 10.
Agreed. Next question comes here from Boss Talk NY. Thank you for the question, for supporting our show. How many Duke guys will be in the lottery next year? This is an interesting question. Duke's going to have a really solid team next year. I think definitely Jalen Johnson is a lock, if you will, early on.
Yeah, definitely, 100%. I don't see a way he doesn't get there.
But there's Brakefield, who I know you've been high on, that could potentially sneak in. I don't know if he's lottery level, and I don't know. I'm not saying Brakefield is either, but I don't know if he's lottery level. But a returner, Matthew Hurt, I'm pretty high on him. Yeah. I wish he would actually declare this year while he still can, because I like his shot making ability is interesting and with at his size and it will be interesting.
He's a really strange prospect.
he's interesting to watch, but he shows flashes of being, you know, NBA level. So I want to say Hurt would be a lottery guy. Maybe Wendell Moore has a resurgent year next year. Duke's going to be super interesting team to watch. And they also have DJ Stewart and Jeremy Roach. So I don't view those guys as lottery guys, but we'll see how
they do. Nor do I.
So I would just say Jalen Johnson at this point.
Yeah, and I was notably high on Brakefield early on just because he has some initiator skills and perimeter skills at 6'8". But he has a lot of growth needed, and I could see him taking a couple of years. But, the guys that I see coming in, you know, Mark Williams is, 7 foot, 225, DJ Stewart and Roach. I just don't see them as lottery guys, and I think they're going to defer to, Wendell Moore and Matthew Hurt. And, I really don't see them making a lottery impact.
Yeah. Yet. Especially with the talent that is in this class. It's going to be hard to crack that lottery.
Yeah, you're going to have a starting lineup that might be, Jeremy Roach, Stewart, or Johnson, Hurt, and, Mark Williams, or, something along those lines. Yeah. Maybe even, Coleman or... They have so many angles that could go that.
Yes, they do. They do.
Yeah, I still think that Jalen Johnson is probably the only guy that's really going to be a solidified lottery.
Agreed. Last question coming here from Kuzi. Great scouting reports per usual. Thanks for the question. Yeah, which teams fit for Denny, Theo Maledon, Poku, and Killian?
He has to bring us back to 2020, man.
The only 2020 question of the draft. But it's definitely a good question.
All right. Let's try to avoid the teams that have the best development programs, because that's just not fair.
Agreed. No Raptors.
Because as much as I'd love to see everyone, Poku on the Raptors or the Spurs, and, with Killian. Yeah, that would just be beautiful. Favorite fit for Killian? I may be biased. I am definitely biased. Is the Chicago Bulls? I think he'd be the great initiator that we need, and I think he wouldn't be forced to be a primary creator as far as scoring. he can defer to Lowry and Zach and use Wendell as a role man. I think that's the perfect young situation for him to get set up in, with, you know, Karnišević and our new, you know, kind of our new staff.
New age.
Yeah, you know, we're taking a new step, and being the leader of a new era would be something I'd really like to see Killian in, my opinion.
Agreed.
But I also would like Denny Avdija. But I'll try to push away
like
my Bulls
them,
bias.
Like you want your one and two guys on your draft board. You want your one and two on the Bulls. Makes sense.
Yeah,
honestly.
I mean, you know, no bias, just the best fit. Avdija, I think, would really thrive on Golden State. Obviously, a lot of guys will, but I think he'll be in the type of role that will suit him best as another glue guy. That can play on the wing and handle the ball and, you know, have some scoring gravity as well. But he would be really fun on that team with that many shooters. And, you know, it's hard to see any glue guy not thriving there. But that's where people would be like, oh, man, we were sleeping on Avdija. You know, he's making all these great plays. But
right.
I digress. What about Maladon? I'm not huge on Theo.
I'm not a huge
more of a backup guy, but
completely agree. And honestly, like the easy answer is the Spurs, like we mentioned, because it just makes sense. French point guard, international point guard that, you know, doesn't have insane athletic tools. Where have we seen this before? Tony Parker floater beat LeBron in the finals, right? That makes sense. Yeah. But I think, you know, Theo on a team, maybe like Dallas or something like that, that kind of needs could be interesting. And, you know, we'll see. I mean, he's not in my first round at the moment. So I think it's really just going to depend on what team needs what in the second round with Theo, but at least you mentioned it. Killian on the Bulls is a really nice fit. I think Denny on Atlanta is a really, really
fit. Yeah.
Like, I think that's damn near a perfect fit just with their roster construction. They need better wings. they really do that. I think they just need better wings, and Reddish and Hunter.
They need
connecting
pieces too.
Right. They need connecting pieces, guys that can play alongside Trae Young and Denny Avdija for being the top glue guy, arguably, in the 2020 NBA draft class.
Definitely.
It's a really, really nice fit there. Killian on the Pistons as well. I'm a fan of that fit. I think that would work out pretty nicely.
Yeah.
And then like
to go back to your go ahead.
Poku on, I mean, ever since you drafted him, Poku on the Bucks is just disgusting to think about. I think Poku on the Bucks or the Celtics would just maximize. I mean, and Poku on the Raptors
the
is just like it's like a Christmas present that you just want to open.
Oh,
he would never. I mean, you could just write Hall of Famer over his name after he gets drafted to Toronto. I'm just kidding. No, but definitely, I think on like a realistic, realistic perspective, Poku 19 to the Bucks makes sense.
Love it.
Like, it's something that I could actually see happening, and everyone would be scared for years if it works out with him and Giannis. So.
Oh my God, the marketability you get too with that. I mean, two Greek guys are gonna. I'd love that. Yeah, that'd be awesome.
Entire country of
Serbian,
Greece,
but you know, he played. Yeah, right. But still, it's just cool. I really think that'd be the best fit for him. Be in a competitive environment like that. That's gonna push him. You know, to really develop his skill set and his body, because. You know, Giannis has that infectious energy that could really help him out. So, yeah, I'm definitely a huge fan of that. Did we miss anybody? I think we got them all.
That's about it. And it kind of just shows you how deep and how excellent the potential is in this upcoming draft class. Like that, there is. I mean, and cherish it honestly, because this could be the best draft class that we see in a while. If guys do end up panning out, and you know, it's a class that even if guys fall or don't, you know, play as well as they're potentially projected to, there's a number of other returners and incoming freshmen that are kind of just lying in the sleeper category. as of now that have the, you know, potential to skyrocket up boards and make it super interesting. So I'm super excited to just watch this class and hoping that college basketball does come around so that we can see them on that semi-professional stage.
Definitely. I fingers are crossed because it could be a really, really fun season.
Yeah.
It's just, I hate it all being up in the air. It's really frustrating, but I just hope everyone stays safe and, you know, handles it correctly.
Agree with you there. We'll be back next week with another episode, TBD, what we're going to talk about. But, you know, back to 2020, yeah, back, we'll to back to reality. Back to reality.
We'll figure it out.
As always, if you enjoyed the podcast, please leave a like, subscribe to it, whatever you want to do. Really appreciate it. Appreciate the traction that we've been getting on this podcast, the questions and everything. If you made it this far, follow both of us on Twitter, at Ethan Piotr for me, at AHB Analytics for Alex. And we'll continue riding with you guys and pumping out this content as the Road Talktober continues.
All right. Looking forward to it. Thanks for listening, guys.
See you next week.